Now he wants to go to the men's room.
Have you read that script with Danny?
Oh, my watch got super off.
Oh, my gosh.
Which one?
John Brown.
Oh, I haven't read it.
I read it over the weekend, and I came back and said, you're an idiot if you don't pursue this and make this movie. I mean, it is great. Yeah, he needs to make the movie. It was really good. Yeah, sure he was. There's a couple of parts he can play, but obviously not John Brown.
Good evening.
Hi.
Last week we talked about health. And last week I wasn't feeling well. But as you notice, this week I'm feeling fine. Not that I wasn't feeling all that fine last week, but I had a horrible voice from bronchitis. And I made the statement that the dish is never dirty. Mm-hmm. And that's what you have to remember, that the dish is never dirty. I had bronchitis. That has nothing to do with me whatsoever. It's a condition. And the dish had dirt on it. And now the dirt is gone. But the dish was never dirty. Do you understand that? You see, you cannot buy in to what's going on inside your body. Because it's not you. It's not you at all. And when you know that, and use that, the condition that you have has to go away. It just has to go away. So, when I talk about the dish means your spirit. You see, there's nothing on the outside of life that can affect your spirit. Your spirit always remains untouched by anything on the outside of life. But we start to believe that it is us and that it has something to do with us. Come in, Wesley. And it doesn't. The world outside is very convincing. And if you're having any type of an ailment, it's very convincing. If you break your arm, it's convincing. You can look and see your arm, perhaps the bones protruding out. But we have a mindset that it takes, I think, 6 weeks for a bone to repair itself. That's just a mindset. Because the doctor says it takes 6 weeks, it takes 6 weeks. You can heal yourself faster. You can heal yourself faster. With this bronchitis thing, everyone I talked to during the week said, did you get antibiotics? Well, no, I didn't get antibiotics because it has nothing to do with bacteria at all. Now, you can take a shot, an antibiotic shot, and use it as a placebo if you want. And that's what happens. It doesn't affect you at all, except in your mind. I made the statement last week that there's no physical causation for disease. This I believe. And this is the teaching of religious science or science of mind. We don't deny the disease. We deny the necessity for it. And as medical science is growing and growing, they have discovered that almost everything is psychosomatic. You see, it has to start in the mind. Everything that happens to us, everything that comes into our life, starts in the mind and moves outward and demonstrates itself, or what we say, manifests itself. So with that said, tonight we're going to talk about how to keep ourselves healthy and how not to buy into these different things. And there's no one new here. Everyone knows this as a metaphysical teaching.
I thought tonight's subject was hugs.
It is going to be hugs. And hugs keep you healthy.
Damn straight.
A lot of things keep you healthy. Hugs is number one on the list. All right, with that said, we'll start as we always do with spiritual mind treatment. And when I use the word spiritual mind treatment, it's just a form of prayer. We are taking time out to affirm or reaffirm what this universe, or what this thing we call God, already knows about us. This thing that we call God always holds us in the highest of esteem. It always holds us in perfect health. God does not say, oh, Dallas isn't feeling well today. Dallas is sick today. The universe or God will never say that. The universe or God will always say Dallas is in perfect health, because Dallas is a perfect manifestation of me. The creation and the creator are one in the same. Also, now, when I use the word spiritual mind treatment, how many people do treatment? We'll just call it treatment. You don't have to do spiritual mind treatment. Does everyone use treatment? Do you know what treatment is used for? Treatment is used to guide your mind, not to guide God's mind. You can't influence God's mind. God already has his mind made up about you. You're whole, complete, and perfect. We don't. But when I say do spiritual mind treatment, we use spiritual mind treatment all the time. When you come into this class, if you say to yourself, I am here because I know that I'm going to learn something of value tonight, that's a spiritual mind treatment. And you will learn something of value tonight. If you come in with no intention whatsoever and just sit here, you may or you may not receive something. But you have to make your mind ready for that. You have to prime your mind by saying, I'm going to learn something tonight. You do that with everything. That's what it means by praying without ceasing. You have to constantly be telling your mind what you want. You just don't come here haphazardly and think, oh, well, maybe I'll hear something, maybe I won't. You have to come in here and say, I'm going to hear something tonight. I'm going to hear something that's going to change my life. Did you not hear something a week or so ago? See. And what that is, I have no idea. Because as I tell you people, I just sit here saying the same thing over and over. I just say it in different ways. So that eventually, it will click in your mind. That's all it is a shift in consciousness, a shift in mind. But if you will do that for yourself and prepare yourself always for whatever you do, if you're going to an audition, you prepare for that audition mentally first. and you say what you're going to receive from that audition. That's preparation. That's preparing your mind. So that's what we're doing with spiritual mind treatment. I just wanted to make that clear, because I do say spiritual mind treatment and I use the word prayer at the same time, and many people think, oh well, we'll save prayer till we really need it. You know, you heard the story about the ship sinking. And they did this and they did that. The ship kept on sinking. So finally the captain said, well, we're going to have to pray. And one woman said, oh my God, has it come down to that? You see, you should always pray. It never comes down to prayer. Prayer should be the number one thing in your mind all the time. And that's not going to make you look religious or a fanatic or anything. You don't have to tell people that you're doing it. You can do it silently within your own mind. All right, with that said, I will do a spiritual mind treatment. I'll do this in the first person, and all those who are willing may take it for themselves in the first person. And this is what I know, believe, and accept for myself. I am truly one. I am truly one with the only power there is in the universe, and that power is the power for good. And I use that power right here and right now to bring into my life all the wonderful things that I desire. And one of the wonderful things that I desire is money, prosperity, abundance. And I allow myself to be open to receive that, because I know that I am worthy, that I am deserving, and I am certainly totally lovable. And I let that be so, and so it is. Does anyone have any questions about spiritual mind treatment or anything that I just said? Do you understand how you can use it for everything? It's just conditioning your mind so that your mind finally tells you what you want to hear. It finally tells you what you want to hear. Wouldn't you like to hear all the time that you're wonderful? That's why we do what the affirmation, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful me. So that there's never a doubt in your mind that you're anything but wonderful. So that there's never a doubt in your mind that you're not connected with this thing we call God. You see? God meaning an energy, meaning a power that we are all one with. And it's the realization of the oneness with God or the universe that will heal your life. It will heal your life physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Just by knowing that you are one with the only power there is. And remember, we only teach, or I only teach, one power. The power for good. You will never hear me say that there's any other power. You will hear brand name religions tell you that there's another power out there known as evil, or the devil, or bad. Please, do not buy into that. There's an illusion out there that those things happen. But it is not true. It is not true.
They had a program, I think it was the Learning Channel, maybe even the History Channel, all about the evolution of the devil in our society and how it came about and how it started in these different things. And they can't find it in the Old Testament. And they had to make up, they had to kind of change the Adam and Eve story because there was no point. So we had to, the Christians had to make it more evil.
Yes.
But it really took off once Dante came in.
Yes.
Then we had a ball with the devil.
And we're still having a ball with that. Don't buy into it. It does no good for you. What good does it do? Does you no good whatsoever. In a couple weeks, I'm putting together a talk called Faith of Our Fathers. And we're going to look at why we think different things. We're going to talk about the burning bush. And we're going to talk about brimstone, fire and brimstone, and see why they are in the Bible and why they are in our consciousness. And when you find out why they're there, you're going to go, oh. Because they're not anything that you've been taught. Okay? Nothing that you've been taught. Religious Science has a saying, and usually the United Church Religious Science uses it the most, and it's called, change your mind, change your life. I heard Oprah say, change your bra, change your life. So, she maintains that most women are wearing the wrong bra. And if you just change your bra, you're going to change your life. Which I think is unusual. I also saw a little clip, and this has to do with our money consciousness. And it was a clip for Strong Medicine. And the doctor, the woman doctor, was under the sink fixing the plumbing. And she was talking to her daughter, was standing there. Look her about this time. And the daughter said to her, Mother, why don't you hire a plumber? No. I can do this myself. The little girl finally said to her mother, Mother, are we poor? You see how we make these things in our mind? That woman was a doctor. After the little girl left the room, she says to herself, of course we're not poor. All the alimony I paid your father. But they're saving, and children see that, you see. They see that, and they conclude, well, we must be poor because we cannot afford a plumber. I'm just telling you that in case you're around people. Watch what you're doing and saying and looking at so that you don't get those ideas in your head. Now, that little girl may keep that into adulthood and think, well, we grew up poor, even though her mother was a doctor. You see. So you have to think of those things. Does anyone, we're going to talk about hugs, really. There were premature babies born, twins. And they weren't doing very well. They were in separate incubators. And one of the nurses in the unit decided, let's put them together in the same incubator. As soon as she put them together, the one little baby put its arm over the other one. As soon as they did that, their heartbeat changed, their breathing changed, and they started to grow and become normal. Because they were used to being together. And they were used to being touched. They were used to being touched. Tactile qualities, abilities, we all need. We need to be touched. You've often heard me talk about my friend Joyce Reynolds. She builds herself as a motivator of one or a thousand. She's the lady who is youthing herself. She believes that you need 3 hugs a day just for maintenance, 5 hugs for growth. And they find this with children. Children that are not hugged do not grow as quickly and as fast and as tall. I think it stops. I think they don't get as tall as people that are touched and hugged. I said to you last week about the energy that we have in our hands, enough to light up Los Angeles, just from the atoms that are in our hands. But we fail to touch people. You know, we talk, we think we can't reach out, touch people. Especially in this day and age, right? Everyone thinks it's a sexual overture of some sort. We have to learn to touch people. And we certainly have to learn to hug people. How many people here get hugged enough?
Nobody.
No. So why don't we stand up and hug each other? And when I say stand up and hug each other, I would like to see everyone hug each other, what I call in a good hug, not what I call the A-frame hug. Does anyone know the A-frame hug? That does nothing for you. An A-frame hug, and that's because people are afraid that their genitals will touch each other. Well, go ahead and let your genitals touch. I'm here to tell you, nothing's going to happen. But you have to really hug somebody. Now, when you hug somebody, stand up. You hold them and you hug. And the reason is that because of the A-frame hug, your hearts don't touch each other. You have to have these hearts touching each other. Then you just hug. Now most people feel uncomfortable about hugging, so what do? They start patting. Don't pat. Don't pat. Because immediately the energy goes again. You're diffusing everything. So stand up and hug somebody.
I want to get the hair on because I have a feeling it's going to be wrong.
And see if you can.
Oh, yeah. All better.
I just got a new camera.
was in cosmetics for redhead hair.
My natural.
It's called redheadsonly.com.
Yes.
I know of that actually.
Keep it up, I have a cold water to throw on.
We were told a story about this. And one started to cry, and the other reached over and put his hand on his brother's
Can you see how the energy changed? Can you see how you changed with the whole thing? Because we all know each other, but we don't touch each other. Try to hug everyone. I hug a lot of people because I need it. You know.
That's one of the problems with the elderly. They develop what they call skin hunger.
Yes.
And it's really, when I would have my students at nursing homes, and of course we now, in the politically correct thing, it's always nice to say, would it be all right if I give you a hug? Because there's that difference between treating someone like a pet, stroking hair, with somebody who's sitting below you can be demeaning, they're not poodles, But I would get down on eye level with them, and it was wonderful.
Yes.
You know, and some people, particularly in nursing homes, have gone without real... I mean, they get touched all the time and handled, and the better aides and assistants, are really good about making it caressing and loving. But people who live alone, particularly the elderly, will be able to suffer from that sort of, you say, skin hunger.
So we need that, you see.
I have four questions. Better answer them quicker, more. Well, I'll start the simplest one. Is there a minimum number of seconds for a hug?
Till it feels good.
Okay.
Till you're relating to the person, that you're not just doing it because it's a hug, that you want to, that you can hear maybe the heartbeat and so forth a moment, that you really want to do it.
Okay. Number two. You're home alone all day, there are no other humans, and you hug, and hugging the pets, does that fulfill the three requirements? I mean,
No.
They don't.
Find somebody to hug.
Because there's so much more willing than people. They follow you around until you do it.
They do. But... try
sure
to do it.
They get there 5 a day.
Please try to do it with people.
Okay. Number three, the stroke, like when you hug, is the stroking okay? You stroke their hair? Is that? No, sir. Just
a hug. As soon as you do something else, the energy changes.
When you might, and my fourth question was, what about giving the person a kiss? Does that mess it up too?
Well, later on. I wouldn't go around hugging, kissing right away.
Well, yeah, but you have to know if it's appropriate in another person.
Yes.
What's the effect of giving a kiss?
Well, I think it's very good.
Jesus.
Oh, did I jump the gun in the next exercise?
No, we're not going to be kissing.
Dallas, I'm sorry. One thing that was, because I read about hugs, and again, medically, and one of the things that was suggested, and I don't know if this is true, is to keep the eyes open while hugging, because then you're present in it, you don't go into your other stuff about hugging, or your past, or your or someone else, you're actually aware you're with that person.
Right.
And stuff. And it's actually a little harder to do sometimes.
And that's the next thing we're going to talk about, is eye contact with people. Now, these little things that I'm telling you, these little techniques like hugging and eye contact, they're healing, and they will keep you healthy. They will keep you healthy. Because you're not shutting out people, you're not isolating yourself. Remember, we're all one when it all goes down and boils down to everything. We're all one. And each and every one of us loves to be touched and we love to be hugged. But we make decisions in our mind. And we vote in our mind. Oh, I only shake hands with that person. See, we go down the list till finally we see, oh, well, I'll hug that person. Learn to hug everybody. Everyone deserves a hug.
There'd be a lot less crime.
And it would be a lot less crime. There'd be a lot less anything. Now, with the eye contact, which is always to talk to people, if you notice when I talk, I look at you people and I turn. Do you know that husbands and wives live together? They take their relationship for granted and they stop looking at each other. They stop looking at each other. Because the mind says, well, I know what he looks like, I know what she looks like. You must look at the person. And if you're living in a relationship with somebody, learn to look in their eyes. Only if it's for a second each day, take time out to just not say anything. Just look at each other. Just look at each other so that you know that that person's there. So many people stop saying, I love you, because they figure, that person knows I love them. Do not take that for granted. Everyone likes to hear, I love you. Everyone likes to hear that. That will keep you healthy. You see, it helps both people. Because you cannot hold back the hugs and the love. And many people only want to receive. They do not want to give. You must learn to give and to receive. You must learn to give and receive. That is a universal law. Giving and receiving is an immutable law of the universe. That's the way this thing works. It will bring you money. The more you give away, the more comes back to you. The more you give, the more comes back to you. It's a circular thing. So many people cannot receive. And they want love, they want money, but they cannot receive it. You have to open your heart and your mind to receiving. Is there anyone in here having difficulty doing that? And why is that?
Really,
no.
No. Okay. Wow.
Three of them.
Oh, I feel completely unworthy and all that stuff.
After coming here?
I'm sorry, I have a few gaps. Not most of the time.
No.
On a couple of things. Just a couple areas. Thank you.
Yeah. Well,
I'm working on it.
Good.
Oh, always, every second. Thank you.
You have to convince yourself that you are worthy. Whether somebody tells you that or not, you have to convince yourself of that.
But why would you? I mean, we all have stories.
No, I
next week's talk.
In a Native American tradition, the chief is materially the poorest man in the tribe because he gives everything to his people, but in return they take care of him.
Yes.
That's just...
People are afraid to give something away. And usually they're afraid to give their love away because for some reason they think they don't have enough love. You can't run out of love. Remember when we say God is all there is? Well, love is all there is because love and God are this one and the same thing. And the more love you give away, the more love you're going to get back. That will keep you healthy. That will keep you healthy. So hugs and eyes and love, use these things, you know. There are that many techniques out there. There are that many little tools for you to use to make your life better. Please learn to use them. They were given to you so that you would have them. And people fail to use it. You know, I tell people if you suffer for more than 3 minutes, there's something wrong with you because there's always somebody that can help you. That's what we are here for. To help each other and not go through this suffering. So when you see somebody suffering, say, how can I help you? How can I help you? Well, not only heal them, it will heal you. Does that make sense to you?
Could you clarify the not suffering for more than 3 minutes? Because, you know, I'm thinking about, like, you know, in the past, in, like, romantic relationships where it's like you are torn up over it, or unbearable grief that goes on for, you know, like losing someone. You know, that can often...
Now, when you use the word lose somebody, please tell me what that means.
Someone dies. When someone passes
That's
on.
That's what I thought you meant. Well, first of all, we never lose anybody.
Well, we lose their physical presence here.
We lose their physical presence. And we become very sad because, why? Because we're going to miss them. Do you know that they're not going to miss you? They're completely involved in a whole new and wonderful life. And that's what you must know. Talk about Dante and so forth. These are things that we learned. That it's sad when somebody leaves. That it's this, that, and the other thing. You see, I think when people die, they should put it in the announcement part of the newspaper. Announcing that they have graduated to a whole new life. Instead of in the obituaries saying, isn't that awful, that person died. There's nothing wrong with dying. Dying is part of living. It just goes on, people. It doesn't stop. We get sad because we think we're going to miss them. When my parents died, well, I'd hate to say I was delighted. My brother said he was relieved. I got along very well with my parents, by the way. But what did I say to myself? Oh, well, now I always have them. And they're always right here with me. Instead of thinking of them living in Pennsylvania, Now I know they're in the room here with me. And I don't consider them dead. I still talk to them. Maybe I'm crazy. Let's see. And now we talk about romantic love. Everyone wants to get into romantic love. But, you know, romantic love was only invented, I think, in the 1600s. Before that, no one knew what romantic love was. Or maybe it didn't even exist.
According to Joseph Campbell, it came around at the time of the troubadours.
Is that 1600, I think? Was that?
I think
1300. Well, there we go.
But it was late.
Yes, it was late in the thing, I know.
It was an idea of the traveling singer.
Right.
Wow. They were back, because until then, you were told who you were going to marry.
Yes. And make the best of it. Now, I think romantic love is wonderful and so forth. But when it ends, if it does end, what do I say to myself? Thank goodness I had that time with that person. Look how much I've learned. Then what is the next thought that goes through my head?
I want to do it again.
More, please.
Next, more, please. And I know that I'm always moving from my good to my greater good. And that things come into existence to pass out of existence, and relationships do that. So I do not mourn that relationship. Once again, I celebrate that relationship. And I let it go. Oh, I'm a great man for loving, blessing, and releasing. Which is another way to heal. And to be able to use that. Because we maintain grudges. We maintain little things. And when we do that, we are causing physical damage to ourselves. We are causing physical damage to ourselves. Just say, how many people say that they have an ulcer because of so and so? That person's giving me an ulcer. Well, I don't know where that person got the ulcer to give you, but it's your thinking that's doing it. It's your thinking that's doing it. The person has nothing to do with it whatsoever. How many people say the traffic drives them crazy? Traffic has nothing to do with anything. Your thinking about the traffic has something to do with it. It's all done with your thinking. So your health, your wealth, is all starts in the mind. Doesn't start with changing your bra. It starts with changing your mind. To have a better attitude about yourself. And to see how powerful you really are. And not buy in to what the world outside is telling you. Because the world outside is going to lie to you. Why is it going to lie to you? Because it wants you to buy something and it wants to take your money from you. That's what it's about. So don't listen to those things. Listen to yourself. And use these techniques. You all had a wonderful time hugging. Now, are you going to take that out of the room and learn to do it?
I want to clarify one thing. You say 5 hugs a day. That means not 5 hugs with the same person, but 1 hug with 5 different people.
I think it means both.
Oh, so 25 hugs.
Yeah. But at least learn to touch everyone that comes into your life in some way. If you can't, I had a friend, Linda Dowdrick was her name, and we were teenagers. Linda would always sit so close to you, and she always put her hand right there. Yes, in that day and age, but we need that touching. We need the touching. We don't want to wind up in these different holding places where they warehouse older people and never touch them. No, not the way to go, people. It's very, very important. We are wonderful human beings, completely loaded with that much love to give and to be able to heal people. Why don't we do it? Why don't we do it? When I was at the California Men's Gathering, there is a young man that comes there every year. He's a paraplegic. He writes poetry. Somebody else reads it. Thank God. And he wrote a poetry because he's so distorted looking. People don't touch him. People don't touch him. And the reason why they don't touch him, because he's so distorted, they figure he doesn't need it. He needs it more than anybody else. He also reminds people that he's still capable of having sex. But no one ever thinks of that when they see a crippled person or a paraplegic. They think, oh, well, his body's wasted, this is gone, that's gone. He doesn't need anything. He doesn't need the touch. He doesn't need the sex. He doesn't need any of that. They need it.
I was just playing a mom of an autistic kid, and they got a real autistic kid for who I work with. And we were in a room filled with kids that they really got physically impaired. And there was one kid who had no arms, bless. But the autistic kid kept coming up to him going, like on the stump, it was the most beautiful thing you've ever seen, and it was just really beautiful. It was such a gift.
Can I say something? I have a cousin who in New York who their child is and with crutches and everything else. He studied law and he's very bright. And he finished the law school. There was an ad in the paper that they're looking for a lawyer for work. So he applied for the job because they didn't see him. So they said, okay, we'll interview him. But he came there and they took a look and they said, well, we don't know. You have to do a lot of traveling. You have to do a lot of things. He says to them, I can do anything what anybody else can.
But see, what we do, we judge these people and we think, well, they don't need it or they can't do something. But this idea of touching, and many people I understand this. I grew up, by the way, with old people around me. I had lots of people that were my aunts and uncles, but I found out years later that they were my great aunts and uncles. I didn't know. So I was used to old people. I was also used to my grandfather only had one leg. he got a cut off in the railroad. So I was used to somebody, oh, and I had an uncle who had his fingers cut off in the railroad. A lot of people missing parts on the railroad. But I grew up with these people. So when I see this, it doesn't bother me, it doesn't upset me, where it upsets other people. You see, if they see somebody that's not quite physically right, they think, ooh, I've got to get away from the, and they also make this assumption that they don't need anything. And we need this thing called touch. We need this thing called touch. So we have to learn to touch people. And not just, how many people do you know that sit rigid and never do anything with anybody else? I mean, they may talk. I know some people that I can back out of a room. The closer I get, they just keep... I love to do it. I say, well, watch this, watch me back them right out of it. Because they're scared to death I'm going to touch them.
That's what I was going to ask just before you said that, is how do you put that out without being in ordinary society, without being considered Chester the molester?
Well, first of all, I would never think of Chester the molester, so it wouldn't be in my mind. I would play that game, and I played it with many people till now that I can touch them.
But there are people out there who are afraid of the touch.
Yes, but you have to make them less afraid of that by just keep trying, just
tell
keep
them
trying.
That you're laughing.
Yeah.
What about the days when you wake up and you are that person who you don't want to be touched that day? And I don't know if anyone else has that, but they were like, don't anybody touch me, please don't touch me. Like, when you are that person.
How many persons are you?
We have that mood of like, oh, nobody touch me. That feeling.
Well, if I woke up with that feeling, I'd change it. If I woke up with that feeling that I didn't want anyone to touch me, I would sit and change that feeling. The life of the organism is feelings. When we talk about science of mind, it's really the science of feelings. And we have the ability to change our feelings. That's what it's about, people, is learning to change your feelings. Learning to change what you think about yourself. If you constantly thought that you were wonderful, you would let anyone touch you. If you constantly thought that you were lovable, you would let people touch you. And that's what we're learning to do here. To wake up in the morning and know how wonderful we are, keep that all day long, and go to bed saying, thank you, I had a wonderful day. Isn't life great? I have a friend, Shaw, who wants to leave this plane of action. She wants to join her cat. I say nothing.
That must be difficult.
Yes, it is difficult. I say nothing to her. I think, well. But she said to me today, in fact, she called. And she's ready to move on. I gave her a ticket. But, and she said, I wouldn't want anyone to go through this experience. Meaning this earthly experience. There are many things wrong with this earthly experience, perhaps. But it's a wonderful experience at the same time. We've all gone through challenges. And haven't we come out all right? You see, we're here to be victorious. We're here to find something out about ourselves. Could anyone tell me what we're here to find out about ourselves?
Our
Well, that's one, yes.
That we're lovable.
That you're completely lovable.
And deserving.
And worthy.
Yes.
Limitless.
Yes. This is what you're here for.
And to find the perfect bra.
Yes, of course. Always. But this is why we're here. To know these things about us. And to feel good about ourselves as human beings.
You know, since I've been coming to this class, I really, that's almost like a mantra. Like every day, these spontaneous things come up for me, like, all there is love, there's only love. And God, what a wonderful life. But when certain friends tell me I'm wonderful, I just, it's more impacting or something. Like I have a specific coach that emails me, tells me how wonderful I am and all this. And for some reason, that really is powerful for me.
Yes, because you have a great deal of respect for that person. And that's why that is. But God thinks each and every one of you are wonderful. And that's what you have to remember. That you are. Is everyone here still doing wonderful, wonderful, wonderful me?
I'm kind of emotional right now from what you're talking about. The skin first, and my mom's in a rest home. Knew she was very lonely, and I think that's why she, before you happened to quit, she was like this schwa person, and when we're talking about this, and then the wonderful me today, this morning, I was, I've been starting to walk around a high school track, and I did 12 laps, and I said, wonderful me, thin me, healthy me, wealthy me, wise me, and I then this afternoon, just before coming here, I had a kind of an ugly conversation with someone who's breaking up with a boyfriend who I know, and now I'm dating this friend, and blah, blah, and she just said all these kind of things about, oh, the guy you're with really loves his old girlfriend, and blah, blah, and what was the reason I'm saying this is it was interesting to me that my initial reaction was, it's so comfortable for me to feel left behind. I'm the one that's not wanted. I'm the one that no one wants to touch. And I made that like a moniker, a banner for me, that if you don't want to love me, then I'll be the most unlovable. I hate myself. And I've really been working on myself. And I think it's interesting that I'm so reluctant to really... I can't even enjoy feeling sorry for myself now because I'm starting to...
That's a step in the right direction.
A little bit hollow, and I'm just kind of all in emotional purgatory. I'm kind of busted up, and yet, I'm fighting for my life to find my own dignity
yes.
in myself, and it is not an easy thing, and... I'm really grateful to be here. I really don't understand a lot yet, but it's hard for me to live with those two things, and I can hardly wait till I remember once I told the therapist, oh, so that child, I have to make peace with the child, and he said, not make peace with the child, put a dagger in its heart, and that's kind of what I feel, that demonic thing inside me that prefers to be the martyr and victim, and it's saying wonderful me is doing something, but
it'll move it out of there.
Yeah, it's like a poison I've got to get out. I need a giant bowel movement. Those poisons have got to come.
But keep doing it, and it will work, and we're all going to do it. It's very easy to change your mind. But it's very difficult to keep it changed. Because if you say to yourself, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful me, the ego is going to say, oh yeah, let me tell you, didn't you do this, this, and this? Look at that person, doesn't think you're so wonderful, blah, 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 blah. You cannot listen to that. You cannot listen to that voice inside of you. You have to go to the spiritual. You have to go to that still small voice inside of you that always knows that you're wonderful. The ego is loud. But this thing we call spirit is not loud at all. It's a very quiet, contented, peaceful thing. So we move over to it. The more you practice this teaching, the less you'll be able to get away with things, because you'll know that you can't. You know now that you saw the difference when you were walking and so forth. I had an experience today that I wanted to be self-righteous. And I wanted somebody to know that. That they had done me dirt. And as soon as I started to do it, I said to myself, what are you doing? You can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
You just can't do that stuff anymore. And I left it go. And I went, whew, that felt good. Because when you start that self-righteous crap, you wallow in that for hours, days, weeks. Where does it get you? No wonder people don't want to live here. I mean on the earth plane. Because they buy into that stuff. And you don't have to. There's no reason to buy into that stuff. And this is because somebody made a mistake. The reason why I was going to get self-righteous. And they were a professional. How dare they be a professional and make a mistake? It's my mind. Craziness. Absolute craziness. So what difference does it make? It was corrected. It was corrected. And I don't have to point out mistakes and so forth. When I point out mistakes, or used to point out mistakes, what did that do? That only was for my ego to make me feel superior to somebody. And now I know I don't have to be superior to anybody. I don't have to be. I don't have to show my intelligence. I don't have to show anything. All I have to do is be. That's all I have to do, is just be. And not play that game with the ego all the time. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I wanted to say something, and back to along the lines that you're talking about, because I do say the affirmations, and I find when I say them that my mood changes. But I had a big eye opener this last weekend. I went to a seminar that a guy taught and all this stuff, and I wound up eating fire and breaking a board with my hand and being hypnotized. And so did she. And it was a wonder. And she did. She broke the board, too. But I came out of there, and I realized that it was very easy for me to, on the surface, say those things. But I realized it hadn't been embedded. It really hasn't dwelled and lived. And I realized that's the next step, and that's
yes.
The purpose of, as you were talking at the beginning, of the treatment.
Yes.
He would call it the trance state. Just relax and tell yourself the positive things. And that was an eye-opener for me, and I had a good thing. And I also heard ego is not your amigo.
Yes. That's true. So we learn to separate that. We learn to see those different things. One of the main things with religious science is to teach people to think the thoughts that they want to think and to feel the feelings they want to feel. And we have never been taught that. We think that thoughts just randomly come into our head. We also think that any thought that comes into our head, we have to entertain. If an ugly, disgusting, vulgar individual comes into your house, do you sit there and entertain it? No, you kick the idiot out. That's what you do with a thought that comes into your head that you don't want. You kick it out. And then we're never taught that we control our feelings. Feelings always follow thought. You cannot have a feeling without first having a thought. So if you learn to think correctly and you learn to think differently, your mood changes, your feeling changes. When you wake up in the morning and don't want touched, it's because some thought is going through your head. And it's probably, I'm not lovable.
Actually, it'd be more like other people are not lovable.
Well, you see, we can never go outside of ourselves. When you say other people are not lovable, you're saying I am not lovable.
I used to be like, you know, I'm irritated or afraid of being touched by people who want something, or they're intruding on my desire to be an island that day.
Right. Well, you can change that. And women who think that men are nice to you because they want something, go ahead and think that, but don't give it to them. So you don't have to give anything out. You don't have to give it to them. Whatever it is they're after, say no thank you. You see? We have to learn to control our thinking and our feelings. And that will make your life absolutely wonderful. And I think you people are absolutely wonderful. I know I'm wonderful. And there ends the lesson. Thank you.
A couple of really important announcements. One is it next week?
Yes.
Next week, this class will be on Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. Because Thursday night, Candace's class, which is normally on Wednesday night, is being shipped to them. So next week, if you want Dallas's class, come on Wednesday night, and we'll hopefully get the email to include that on it. Other than that, Dallas is available for privates, for hypnotherapy, and for private coaching, and there's a donation basket there for Dallas's class, and feel free to sign in, and thank you all so much for coming.
Thank you.
I have a talk on Wednesdays, so I'll see you tomorrow.